This is the Creasecast.
We're here to talk about the season finally being over. Your Colorado Avalanche are champions once again. 21-year drought is over. Kale McCarr wins the Conn Smythe literally like a day after winning the Norris. Like, and pretty good.
And playing through that whole game, like, you noticed it before I did, where you, like, there was like the shot of him and like, I think, what did you saw it during like the second period?
It was
first,
like,
intermission.
I think it was after the second intermission or the first, and they were just like showing everyone in the locker, and McCarr was just kind of leaning into his stall, but his gloves were off. So you could see his left arm was just like covered in like one of those support brace things. He had like tape everywhere. And I was like, oh, maybe that's why he hasn't scored a goal yet this series. Still didn't matter because the guy was, you know, unreal, but crazy series. Loved how competitive that final game was. I was thinking about this today. I was like, you know, I don't like series ending in game six because it feels kind of anticlimactic. Like it was always going to happen that way. Like, there's just something satisfying about a game seven decider. Like, it just feels so definitive. Like, you know, all the chips are on the table. Everything's riding on every play. And then this one was just kind of like, well, Tampa got to the lead, but Colorado was completely in control despite the fact that they had a lead. It was just like an inevitability. It was like that villain from Marvel, Iron Man.
Thanos, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Thanos, that guy.
Steven Thanos, yeah.
That's true. So, yeah, it was like the big takeaway for me, though, was just like how funny it was to see Corey Perry lose his third Stanley Cup final in a row.
Like, yeah, look, I feel bad on like a human level. I'm like, oh, that suck. Like, that kind of, like, that does suck. Like, that's got to be, like, there was, like, particularly there was the shot, the broadcast caught the shot of
his wife, kid,
holding his kid, holding their child, and like bawling her, and the wife was like bawling her, his wife was like bawling her eyes out. And in that moment, I was like, oh God, like, that's gotta be miserable. Like, not in the sense of like, yeah, like, obviously, you know, it's getting to live in the life of as being like in an NHL family has a lot of perks to it, but there's got to be something so tough about, especially as like the partner in this case of like the significant other, of like literally having to, of literally flying across different parts of the country every single year to a new city and having to make new friends, new connections, find a new house, all of those things, doing one of those being during a pandemic where she couldn't even see her husband for long stretches of time during their playoff run, and for him to come out every single time on the short end of the stick, like, that's gotta be so tough. But at the same time, it's Corey Perry, so nobody cared. Everyone thought it was hilarious.
Okay, hang on. Did he lose in six games every single time?
He lost
Dallas
in
was
five
six.
With Montreal.
Oh, yeah, five was Montreal. Okay, well.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, and that series was one of those, like, okay, at least in that series, it was a case of, like, well, they never stood a chance. Like, you were, like...
They were happy to be there.
They were just happy to be there. Like, you can kind of chalk that one up to, there are more good memories here than bad ones because of how unlikely
because of
that
what
was.
We, yeah, like, what we overcame to get here, whatever.
Yeah. This year, he was playing on the back-to-back champions who had beaten him the first two times. And then still lost. And then somebody pointed out the picture of him literally being on the ice in the final 10 seconds.
Look,
as, like, Kemper's throwing his gear. And, like, you just see Perry skating by the face-off dot. You're like, oh, no.
a part of me wonders, too, like, if you're Corey Perry, like, obviously he had free reign to sign wherever he wanted. And apparently Julien Brisebois, like actually, like, wanted Corey Perry for them before their... I think their 2021 run, I think he said, but like the money didn't work out or something. So that's why they signed him to a 2-year deal for this one. And so part of me is like, if you're Corey Perry, wouldn't you be like, the odds of a team three-peating are so, so low. that by just signing there, you're almost guaranteeing that it's not going to happen.
A little, I mean, yeah, a little bit. Like it's because again, like we've talked about it many times in the last couple weeks, particularly because of like how in the early parts of this series in particular, the Avalanche were clearly like outpacing the Lightning at every turn. Mm-hmm. Like it was a case of like, you were looking at them, you're like, okay, well, this look, they are looking like it. They're looking like a team that's played over two, like 200 hockey games in the last like 2.5 years. If like that, like that's a, it's a, it's so taxing on your body. Like, and then there's there, and like, that's not even clear. Like, then there's some guys like Pat Maroon who literally played in four straight. Like he played a whole other game seven playoff run with the Blues before joining Tampa. So like, yeah, like the amount of toll that takes on your body is so difficult. And like, I'll give credit to the Lightning in game six in particular. Like in the early parts of that game, they were holding, like they were controlling the pace of play. Like they actually, and it was very like, it clearly ended up being a case of like, they put every last ounce into the of gas in the tank left into like that first period and a half. And then they just ran out. They just ran out of steam. But like the amount of work that it takes to get there is so taxing as a group that like, yeah, if you're Corey Perry, like there is a little bit of like, hey, oh God, like, yeah, they've won two in a row, but what are the odds that they can keep up that pace again? Like that's eventually you're going to run out of steam. But like, I mean, oh God, like the Lightning are so good. They still got it to a sixth game where I'm like, it wasn't a bad bet.
It was, yeah, it wasn't like a complete blowout. Like you're saying, they clearly like emptied the tank to try and get that lead. They'd been struggling the entire time with the Colorado Avalanche's second period gear because they just become like a complete force at that point. And this is like a foot speed issue. Like the long change in the second period for any team is usually rough. It's even rougher when you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, like you said, who are, you know, on their third consecutive cup finals. That's a lot of hockey. That's a lot of exhaustion on the legs. And when you just burnt the tank to get a lead, like to then be like, oh, you need the second period to shut down this absolute monster. And then they lose Anthony Cirelli for like a considerable amount of time to an injury. Like it's basically like all these things not shaking out in their favor. You could see all these calls go some terrible calls not being made on both teams. And then the ones that do get made, they just started losing their composure because you could tell they were just kind of like we need everything to shake right. And these calls going against us, like is not going to play into us having a good chance here, which is weird because their PK was fine all game. Like they were really good. It was just like, they clearly were riding a wave of momentum after the first period and they couldn't maintain it in the second. And Colorado took over. Bowen Byram especially like led the team with 5v5 minutes, like as a 20-year-old or whatever. Like shout out to him and you know, Vancouver Giants connection, that rules.
Yeah. I posted on my Instagram story like a picture from like one of the last Giants game I covered before the world shut down, which was when the Calgary Hitmen came to town with Jet Wu and Carson Folk playing on that Hitmen team. And like I posted like the throwback video of like Byram after like a game ending fight. Right. And he's like pumping up the crowd kind of thing. And it was like, wow, like looking back on that, like only two years later, he's a Stanley Cup champion. And not only was he wasn't just like riding along for the ride. He was very like much
instrumental,
a huge crucial part, especially in the late parts of that series when, you know, like you mentioned, like we mentioned, Makar was clearly playing injured. Josh Manson was not looking particularly as strong as he had in other parts of the playoffs. Like there were Sam Girard had been out since the Blues series. Like they needed Byram to step up and play that role for them to do as well defensively as they did. And he stepped right up to the plate. Like it's again, we're talking about a guy who at one point this season, we were legitimately concerned might never play again because of concussion issues. And like that was, and so for him, like it's talk about like a feel good story. Like it's incredible to see him have that kind of impact on the Avalanche and win the cup in that fashion. But also just from like the human standpoint of like, it's been really cool. Like I haven't had a lot of guys like where I've been like, I've seen them play from like junior up to now. It's so cool seeing him go from like being like the Giants, like superstar player to and within 2 years to being a champion and getting to hoist the cup. Like that's incredible.
Yeah. I'm looking at the chart right now on like Wikipedia or whatever for the age or whatever. It is actually like insane how young like the key contributors are on the Avs. Like,
oh my god, like let's talk about all the people leaving right now, all the
UFAs or whatever. Like, remember we were talking in the last round about how, you know, the team might lose, like if they don't win a cup right now, they might be screwed because they can't retain like half of these guys. Now they don't have to worry about that at all. And they've got their core like completely locked in. Like they're going to lose, like you said, Josh Manson, Nazem Kadri, Kemper, Eric Johnson, I think, Cogliano, Helm, and Jack Johnson. Basically a bunch of dudes over 30 that, while they played a good role with Colorado in their cup win, aren't essential moving forward. Like those are guys you can replace for cheap if you can find the right people. Like, they're set, man. And I think we have in our little question thing about whether or not we think the Lightning lose their dynasty or do they still keep it? And I'm going to ask you, do you believe Colorado can repeat next year?
Ooh, I think it depends like you meant, like how much of this roster comes back. Like here's the thing. I think I could very realistically see them going in more of a like a not, I think that I guess the best comparable would be like the Blackhawks, where they didn't win all their cups within like in like 3 years in a row. They kind of, they were like spaced out over like 5 years.
Yeah.
I can see the Avalanche being in a situation where if they retain enough of these guys, like, I mean, okay. Nazem Kadri, I mean, God, you might have to keep him. You might have to keep him regardless of how much he costs. Like that, like the, like again, talk about a guy who deserved that Stanley Cup, and we'll talk about him a bit later in his post-game interview, which is hilarious and absolutely fantastic. But like, I mean, there are some guys here where it's like yeah, you probably move on from like Andrew Cogliano, Darren Helm. Like those guys aren't coming back. They're in their mid to late 30s.
You probably move on from all of them and you just try and replenish what they brought to the table, like for even cheaper, so that you can maybe re-sign Val Nichushkin or Kadri on like a team friendly deal.
I tweeted
it last night, like Joe Sakic now has the ability and the leverage to go to all of these UFAs and be like, hey, do you want to try and repeat what we just accomplished here? Because if you take a team discount, we can do that.
Yeah, and this isn't like, and in a different sort of scenario than Tampa, where like both teams built championships in like long rebuild fashion, but they've taken kind of different directions. Where like Tampa has definitely built themselves around like bringing in a lot of guys on like with some term to try and win in that very set window. Whereas Colorado is in this spot now, like you've said, they have enough cap freedom that they can go to a lot of guys and be like, hey, if you want willing to take a team friendly, like 1-2 year deal with us, you can be a part of something special here, and you can get some really good players to come in and play with Nathan MacKinnon, with Gabriel Landeskog, with Mikko Rantanen, and so many great players like Kale McCarr, the list goes on, right? You can
is be like, look what I did with $12 million in cap space to get you guys into a championship caliber team. Now if I have $26 million, like what do you think I can do? Like Tampa, their whole thing was, you know, we're going to try and set up established windows. So we're going to sign these guys to 2 year deals so that we get one shot and a second shot after. And if it works out, then great. If not, then, oh, well, we still have the year after. Yeah. Colorado has entered that window where they've got most of their key guys on an additional 2 to 3 years with, I think MacKinnon's the only one expiring over the next few years, but
Yeah.
They can easily go now and say, we've got Makar, Taves, and Landeskog locked up long term. We can clearly win a cup without a good goaltender. So all we need to do is find guys that we can bring in for cheap 2 to 3 year deals and just keep the window going.
Yeah. Okay. On the Darcy Kemper thing, like, look, hey, he's a Stanley Cup champion.
He sucked. It's all right.
Yeah, well,
he's terrible.
He was not great.
Pavel Francouz, that goal he let in. Ooh.
Yeah. That one goal he let in game six was not great, was not fantastic. But like, and here's the thing, like, you don't need, I'm not going to sit here and say like you need elite goaltending to win a championship, because I don't think that's necessarily true. You just need to have capable.
Yeah.
It just needs to be capable. Like, having elite goaltending can get you a lot farther. At example, mm-hmm. Andrei Vasilevsky.
If it's a luxury, it's great. Like, if you have a team like obviously for Tampa, it's like, yeah, they don't depend on Vasilevsky to get where they are. They conveniently have a very well-built team, and Vasilevsky is just icing on the cake, where you have like this unbelievable goaltender, but he isn't the sole reason why they're doing it. Whereas Colorado's like, our defense is so mobile and able to move the puck around the ice, and our team is super fast, that it doesn't really matter how average our goaltending is, because our team is committed to playing defense and moving the puck as fast as possible, so we're not in our zone. And I mean, that's why it's kind of like, okay, well, what are the Canucks then? Because you can't keep relying on, you know, well, Demko will bail us out. He'll give us 45 saves, and that's our game plan. That's why it was such a relief to yourself and myself when Jim Rutherford came in and was like, yeah, we can't just rely on a goalie all the time. Like, that's not how a team should operate. And it was a relief to hear it then. It's a relief to see it in practice too, in the playoffs, where Darcy Kemper can have the worst stats of all goalies that played more than 10 games, and it didn't matter. Like, that's great. Like, that's good. And then, like, I mean, I know you're a big Demko guy, so hopefully this doesn't lead to them realizing like we should sell high on Demko and get what we can.
If
we're doing the copycat model, if you're an NHL GM and you're like, okay, I'm gonna replicate what the last cup winner did, you're probably looking at your team and going, does Demko actually help us or impede our ability to build a contender tender 2 to 3 years down the road?
Well, I will say that I will say, just like for context, right? Darcy Kemper's cap hit last year was 4.5 million AAV.
Mm-hmm.
Demko's is five. Like, it's a 500K difference, right? For the next 4 years. So it's not even like a case of where, oh, he's taking up too much cap space and it's costing us dearly, right? It's a case like the Canucks have one of the most insane like steals
they have a sweetheart deal on that goalie, which is why it's almost a shame that it is such a good contract. Like, you almost hope it was like bad, because then you could just complain about everything with the team, which is what we love to do if you listen to this show. But like, because it's such a good deal, it just makes you mad that everything else isn't a good deal.
Or
dumb, like Elias Pettersson's bridge, right? Like, it's just doomed to fail the second they sign it.
Yeah, I've said it before. I'll say it again. Like, Jim Benning, the only thing he seemed to know how to do was manage goalies. Like, that was the one thing he seemed to be decent at. It's wild.
Because we talked about on this show the best aspect of Benning's tenure was getting like elite goaltending out of whoever the hell it was at a time when he absolutely did not have any reason to have elite goaltending.
Yeah, like Ryan Miller was awesome in all the years he was here for a team that
they didn't need him to be elite. Tanking.
It's not his fault he's awesome, but like it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's so funny just looking back on that on Benning's tenure, where it's like he could not like if we're looking at it in like baseball terms, he could not like stop striking out on every single like skater he signed, but somehow just was socking dingers every single time with the goalies.
Like he could nail the curve, but like just fast pitch, like he just swing and a miss every single time.
Yeah, like 100%. Like it's so like all the contract was always team friendly. It was always the goalie always like just stole the show. Like
and even then like ridiculous. When he inherited,
backups did fine. Like
well, I was gonna say like even when he inherited Eddie Lack, and it was like Eddie Lack came in relief for Ryan Miller and still drove them to the playoffs when he had no right to.
Yeah.
Like,
just, and then he smartly, like, as much as I loved Eddie, he smartly moved on from him at the right time when his ceiling was at the highest, and then kept Miller, which was the right choice. Like, just in like, yeah, like again, so weird. And yeah, with like the way the Canucks are set up in goal right now, they're set up for if they can build the window in time, which like, look, Demko's got 4 years to go. There's totally time to get to at least a competitive spot.
In
like
theory,
a cup
in theory, within 4 years, they should be at least getting to playoffs. If in 2 years, they're still like figuring it out, like trying to like clear their cap and their books, like then it's kind of like we're entering doom and gloom scenario.
Yeah, they
like
should
it's
be
never gonna happen.
Yeah, by the time Demko is on his last contract, they should at the very least, in my opinion, be like fighting for a division title. Like they should be in that conversation. Like if they're not, they're doing something wrong. Like
it is a bit concerning too when you look at just like how easily Colorado ran through the Western Conference in the playoffs, and you're like they would have been like had achieved the impossible and gotten into playoffs as the second wild card, they would have been Nashville. And Nashville got steamrolled. Like, and there's only so far they can go to be slightly better than Nashville.
Yeah.
They're still going to get steamrolled.
Yeah, they were still going to get steamrolled either way. Like, the Avalanche were just, again, like, they were... It didn't feel like a team of destiny per se with Colorado because of like how many times, like they're not necessarily a team. They're one of the rare teams in the last little while here where it's like when they lost, it wasn't because they like say choked away a golden opportunity more or less. Like it was always like just the like rotten luck hitting them at just the worst possible time. If you know what I'm saying, like it was never for a lack of try whereas like compared to like other teams. And like for them this year, like seeing the writing on the wall where it was like, oh, this team's going to win the cup this year. Like as soon as like once they passed the second round hurdle against the Blues, it was like, okay, there's nobody stopping them. Like there's nobody who's going to be able to come through and stop them.
Yeah. Cause the only competition they really had in the Western bracket was St. Louis. Binnington was good. And he was fine, but the St. Louis Blues just like collapsed. Or Calgary, if Jacob Markstrom was Jacob Markstrom. Unfortunately, he completely fell off a cliff. And they had no competition at all. It was just the easiest route to a finals probably ever. And not, you know, that they were bad, but just like just how, you know, dominant and easy it was for them to destroy everyone in their
it
past.
Didn't and like they destroyed everybody, but it didn't even necessarily like come easy for them because they lost a lot of guys to key injuries and stuff like that too. Like it wasn't a clean run for them, like
they were missing Kadri for most of it. They didn't even have Sam Girard during the finals.
Or
of the Blues series. Like that's the scary thing where it's like, okay, the if you're a Canucks fan, you're like, okay, what do they need to at least match Colorado? It's like, okay, well, Colorado just had one of the most dominant Stanley Cup runs of all time, and they did it without like their number one defenseman or their second best.
Number two, yeah, Cale McCarr, 100%, yeah,
Cale McCarr. You know what I mean? The number one on the left side or whatever. Because I think Sam Girard is probably better than Devon Taves personally. But
God, Devon Taves, they got for two picks. Just ridiculous team building from Joe Sakic.
I forgot to put that in the notes. The Lou Lamoriello experiment, it strikes again. He's apparently after Josh Anderson from Montreal.
Oh,
for some reason,
Yeah, because he's under the impression that they're going to be back to the conference finals again next year, I guess. I don't know. Like,
You know why? Because Josh Anderson has a no-trade clause and makes $5.5 million per year, and that fits the mold of how he wants every forward on his team to be making $5 million or more and have no trade protection.
Yep, and to have no facial hair as well.
Yeah, they got to trim their sideburns because it's...
Mattingly. Yeah, exactly. Which, and like, we can, that's a whole, like, a whole other thing where it's like, God, I don't even know necessarily, like, from in Montreal's case, like, if, I mean, obviously, if they're giving you the 13th overall pick, that's worth it to you in some fashion. But also, in Montreal's case, like, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you were as bad as you were last year. Like, that in itself was almost just like the worst possible, like, luck all coming to, like, haunt you at once. You're not going to be that bad again next year. You'll be at least a little bit better. Like, so I'm like, I don't
how
really
much
know
do you want to bet Josh Anderson. How much do you want to bet he's going to trade Matthew Barzal for Josh Anderson one for one, because Lou Lamoriello is an idiot?
Well, I mean, he already fired the coach for Matt Barzal, but
yeah,
which, like, I mean, on it, it may be like, it's one of those. No, Matt Barzal, this is a team. You gotta take $5 million. You gotta be like Ken Danico. Like,
you know, it's wild. They have $12 million in cap space and they only have three defensemen signed through next year.
Oh, whoops, bye-bye. Like, yeah, that
classic
yeah,
whoops.
Kiefer Bellows, come on down. No, he's a forward. Or is he a defenseman? I might be wrong.
No, he's a forward, yeah.
He's a forward. Okay. Yeah, like, God, they don't have a lot of, like, I think prospect coming the mix either.
No.
They traded them all for Kyle Palmieri. Like, yeah. But, like, yeah. And, like, yeah, compare what Lou Lamoriello is doing on the island over to, like, yeah, like, the Avalanche and everything. Like, again, like, the Canucks, like, everyone was talking yesterday about, like, okay, every time a team wins the cup, everyone else tries to go out and replicate them, or to some degree. If the Canucks take anything from the Avalanche winning the cup, I hope they take into account, and knowing what I know about Jim Rutherford's tenure, like, history, they probably will, is that you have to be quick on the puck. You have to be able to beat other teams to puck battles and races and those sorts of things. You have to have the acceleration, the speed, the overall, like, stamina to be able to play a full 60 minutes at a high octane pace.
Yeah.
Because the Canucks have pieces here that if they went all in on playing a fast, quick game, they could do it. They've just spent so much time signing guys to be the meat and potatoes and the slow dudes that it has, like, not worked. And they've had to do the thing where they sit back on their lead and just, like, let the other team pelt them with shots forever. Mm-hmm. And, like, I just look at Colorado as a team of, like, God, there is, like Joe Sakic worked miracles on that team. Like, remember, like, it was only like 5 years ago, they were the worst team in the league. They had an absolutely awful season. They trade Matt Duchene. They don't panic trade Matt Duchene, being the key thing there. They wait for the perfect deal to come up. They absolutely get Sam Girard and Bowen Byram out of it. Like, just a clean sweep. And then
just completely bet that the Ottawa Senators were going to be like a dumpster fire by the time they get that top five or top 10 pick. It's unprotected and they end up with Bowen Byram off of it. Like,
yeah.
Then
and even when they finished dead last and didn't win the lottery, they still, I believe, or like around there, I think they still ended up with Cale Makar. That was Cale Makar's pick. Like, cause they ended up with the fourth pick and then Pettersson came right after. Like, that's insane. Like, that's incredible that in a draft where you still lost, where you were as bad as you were, had the bona fide odds to finish first overall, you still ended
up you dropped four spots and still get the best player in the draft.
And still got the best player in the draft. Like, exceptional work by those guys. And, like, you know, like, and like guys like Nazem Kadri, buying on a guy like Nazem Kadri who had his stock depleted in Toronto because of those two different suspensions against the Bruins. And, like, to be fair, like, yeah, it was a kind of a thing where it was like, well, clearly he had to age up a little bit. He had to take a little bit of time to kind of mature as a player. And that's and that Egg took a trade to kind of do that for him. But God, look at how he went this year. Like, he was incredible. He was so crucial to them winning that championship. And then to have him, like, yesterday when he's like, he makes that quote, that incredible quote where he's like, to all the people who said I was a liability in the playoffs, they could kiss my ass. Like,
honestly, I usually don't tune into the post game speech or interviews with players, because usually it's just the dumb shit every time. Like, oh, you dream about this moment, you know, as your little kid, you always want to be here. And it's usually just who cares? The boilerplate stuff. And then you get his, where he tells everyone to kiss his ass for writing him off. Like, that rules. Yeah. Good for him.
You can't help but love and want to root for Nazem Kadri. And that's difficult for a guy, for a player who has the on ice reputation he's had, to kind of revitalize it in that way. But he earned it. He has earned it in spades. And it's it was truly amazing to see him lift the cup and as the first Muslim born or Muslim NHLer to win a Stanley Cup. That's incredible. That's a fantastic moment for hockey. And it's incredible that we've spent this long on the Avalanche and have barely mentioned Nathan MacKinnon, who showed up with a crucial goal at perfect time. Yeah, he's all right.
He's pretty good.
Cole Harbour, man. They have something in the water that just makes great hockey players. Ridiculous. Lead. Yeah, it's lead. That's why all the Flint kids are really good at hockey. Oh, jeez. But yeah, it's... Yeah, Colorado winning, they earned it in all of the right ways. They built the right way. They won the right way. It's incredible. And you know what? And even kudos to the Lightning in the sense of they got on everybody's nerves by the end, whining about every single play, every 10 minutes. Yeah, they're a team that plays super dirty hockey and
They did this playoffs, but I think that was kind of
They've always been the team. No, we talked about it, I think, last year when the Tim Peel thing came out, right? Where the Lightning have always been designed as a team that takes a bunch of penalties, but because of game management, they know they'll eventually get those penalties back.
The makeup calls or whatever. That's
the makeup calls, and they will just ruin you on the power play because they're so lethally good as well.
I would say that doesn't make them dirty, though. That's just gaming the system.
It's gaming the system, but
this year was clearly they were trying to game the system that way, but the refs were kind of I don't say they're onto it, because I don't ever want to credit them with being smart or
knowing what they're doing. God, no.
Yeah, because some of those calls, even the ones they did, okay, so it was a bit obnoxious seeing them whine over every call. But some of those icing calls, legitimately, they had a reason to throw their stick at the ref.
Oh, 100%.
The first one with 2 minutes and 30 seconds left, he's already crossed the hash marks. The puck is already at the red line, and he waits for the player to skate onto it before he says no icing. And then to do that again when there is 35 seconds left, obviously, I don't want to say they cost them the game, because at the end of the day, it was a one goal game against a really good opponent, and they had only registered 4 shots on goal at that point of the period. But when you deny a team as good as Tampa an offensive zone faceoff with 20 something seconds left in the game, you very well could have cost them a game tying goal and prolonging the series. And it almost seemed out of spite, because he literally waited for him to touch the puck after already crossing the lines to then say no. He stopped skating once he touched the puck because he knew it was going to be icing, and then he said no. It was crazy. It was a terrible call.
It was a terrible... It was, yeah. For a group that loves to be we're not going to call anything because we don't want to influence the game, they love to influence the game with other calls.
Indeed.
To be a little bit fair, I do think that there was one icing in particular where that the Lightning did get in that that span at the end of the game with the empty net, where you could clearly see Hedman was doing the fake, oh, I'm going so hard for the puck right now thing. And, but at the same time, it's still well, the second one was still icing. You still have to call the ones that are actually icing.
I definitely thought yeah, they must be all right, we know you're dogging it. But then it was they showed Hedman's shift chart at the end. And it was he'd been on the ice for 2 minutes and 44 seconds. So you're surely the refs realize when the guy's been on the ice forever and they factor that when they're calling icing. But yeah. Earlier in the first period or whatever, there was a Sergachev one where he clearly dogged it. Getting back to the puck, and they did call that one icing, and he was what do you mean? It's well, come on, that one was pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's a bit of an art, to do the whole thing where the fake, oh, I'm working so hard to get back for this icing, but it's too far away. It's kind of a cool little,
thing, you know?
Yeah, it really is. And yeah, there was the reffing was the thing with the one thing with the refs is that I know people were especially in game five in particular, people were oh, the refs are just trying to hand this to Tampa. And it sure did. Mm-hmm. At points look they were
at first it did
gifting it to the Lightning, but no.
Yeah. At first it definitely did, especially when the non-boarding call on McDonough, where it was just 2 minutes when it should have been a major.
Oh God.
And it was kind of on one hand, you can't go from one half of the period where you're okay, the refs are trying to help Tampa even the series, and then seconds later, it's you missed the most egregious and obvious call of the game to that point.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
They still called a penalty, but somehow it
wasn't the right one.
Incredibly stupid. Yeah. He should have been. Okay. So for anyone who didn't see the McDonough hit, blatantly, it was literally textbook guy. I forget exactly which Avalanche player it was. I want to say it was
it Logan O'Connor?
I think it was Logan O'Connor. Logan O'Connor standing a couple feet away from the boards, exactly in that spot where they say it's the most dangerous to hit a guy from behind. Mm-hmm. McDonough skates right in, cross checks him hard. Head first
drives him head first into the boards. It wasn't even close. Wasn't even justifiable. Puck wasn't on his stick at all. Just straight up intent to injure.
Yeah, straight up intent to injure. Easy suspension. And frankly, the fact I don't care that the season's over. The Department of Player Safety should 100% be suspending him right now for that hit to start next year. Because that was ridiculous. And then after they call it, Steven Stamkos is pissed about it and shoots the puck at the ref. And they don't call that either. It's just what are you what's the point of having you here if you're not going to do anything? There was that. There was the whole Josh Manson clearly got away with what should have been a tripping penalty. And then the Avalanche score. And then Pat Maroon tries to hatchet Manson's
literally
try
and cut his leg off with a stick.
Literally doesn't call that either. Or they called it 4-on-4 or some stupid that.
Yeah.
It was just dumb choice. Dumb choice.
You were saying, right?
Gotta go.
Through trying to not influence the game, they are in turn completely influencing the game to a bad degree.
Yeah, I don't know why that's such hard logic for them to grasp, but non-action is still an action. I don't know why that's so hard for them to understand.
Yeah, I genuinely wonder if they look at the games or review them afterwards and they just go oh yeah, missed that. Oh, we called that one kind of right, but it's, debatable. Oh yeah, definitely missed that. That should have been a major, but couldn't do it because of X reasons. The Tim Peel thing just kind of told everyone there's so much game management going on no matter what.
It's the saying the quiet part out loud thing. And they were but then the NHL did the whole thing where they're we got rid of that one bad apple, guys. We did it. We saved the game. We've saved the sport. America. And it's that's not how this works. Oh, yeah, God. The NHL reffing, and we'll have time to talk about this in the off season when there's not so much news to talk about, but NHL refereeing just needs full sweeping reform. It'll never do it, but Yeah.
They basically need to go to the NBA model where the refs are made available for media and they get to review calls. Because
thank you.
There's just no accountability at this point. And the funny thing is, like all things considered, game six, like the reffing was bad, but I don't think it was the worst reffed game of the playoffs. Like that's how like just bad it's been in general.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think they missed some calls that probably influenced the game to like a serious degree with those like late icings. But like there was like straight up, like I know in game three, there was like a mishook. Like you can go to the Toronto series too with like the interference calls too, like the called back goals. It's just like, what are they even doing at this point? Like it's just, you guys are influencing the game.
Yeah. I will say the Toronto series, the Toronto Tampa series in overall though, they did a, like, that was like, they literally showed that they can call all the penalties in a playoff game and not like worry about that. Cause that was literally a whole talking point where that series was the, like the testing ground for that, because a bunch of players, like a bunch of like, of major players, like Connor McDavid was one of them. I think Austin Matthews was another, where they literally were like, hey, can you please call the penalties as they are and not just change the rules the second we get to the playoffs. And they used, I think they were using specifically Toronto Tampa as the testing ground for that. And honestly, like I didn't care that there were a bunch more penalties. It was way better that they were calling everything.
Yeah. It felt like they were calling the game as it should be, which is like more important than just calling what you think is most obvious.
Yeah. Like
I'd rather they call it all and you get like, you know, 14 minutes a night of 4-on-4 than they miss something because they feel like they're influencing it too much by calling it.
Yeah. Especially because the players will adapt as they go. So it'll be a case where it's like, yeah, the first little while of them calling them that way, there will be a lot of penalties, but the longer they go and the more the players get used to, oh, this is the bar now that we can't cross, the less penalties will get called because teams will just be playing a cleaner game overall. So it's like, that's the whole thing. Yeah. Some teams will find will be like, well, we'll just find a sneakier way to play dirty hockey. But like overall, the odds on you just getting teams to play way cleaner hockey by calling everything as they are, it will even out. It'll all come out in the wash eventually. It just means you have to stick with it when in the early going, there will be a lot of games where it's like, yeah, they're calling 10, 12 penalties in this game. And it's a little bit,
It's a bit much, but at least it seems slightly accurate, which is sometimes all you need. All right. Want to get into the Hall news, or do you want to go to the Hall? What do you want to do first?
Let's do the Hall, because that's way. Okay. And so many, like, honestly, I don't know about you, but to me, that's way more important. That's way more important. So I'm wearing, for anyone watching the YouTube video right now, I have pulled out of my closet a shirt I haven't worn in a very long time. It is my Vancouver Millionaires shirt from 2014. And if you look on the back there, it's got Roberto Luongo. It's got Roberto Luongo on it.
Jersey, if you will.
A jersey. Yes, it is. I stopped wearing it because obviously this shirt came out the year he got traded to Florida. And I was like, well, they're going to stop printing these. So I retired them all just for when I might want them again. Oh God. Today was such a big day for that era of the Vancouver Canucks, because like the Canucks don't have a lot of Hall of Fame guys in the Hall of Fame. Like there's Bure, and I think Bure is really the only one that's in there predominantly for what he did as a Vancouver Canuck. Like the rest of them are all kind of like Matt Sundin's in there, but he only played half a season. Mark Messier's in there, but we don't count him.
It's definitely like Luongo's prime body of work came in Vancouver, right? Sedin's body of work clearly came in Vancouver, but like even Bure, you could probably make the argument that he was in the Hall of Fame too because of what he did when he was in Florida. Like some of his seasons where he had like 60 points more than everyone else on the team.
That's true for sure.
Like
that's
say he was probably like a 50-50 split, probably.
I will disagree with that slightly, because I think that, like, okay, floor, like, not to rag on Florida as a franchise, as if they haven't gotten enough of that already, but like look, Roberto Luongo is the perfect example of a guy where, like, he played in Florida twice. He played there before he went to Vancouver and after. He was not the superstar that he was, despite being arguably just as good a goaltender before he came to Vancouver, until he was a Canuck. The Canuck, mm-hmm. being a Vancouver Canuck and playing in that market is what made him the legendary goalie that he was. Like, he was always going to be great. Like, he was always going to be a great goalie, but playing in Vancouver made him the star and made him a star and made him a king. And, like, I feel like, honestly, like God, the Sedins getting in there, like, is so incredible. Like, I don't know about, like, I feel like I almost want to give you the floor when it comes to the Sedins a little bit, because, like, I honestly will fully admit that I didn't appreciate the Sedins enough because of how much the Canucks to me were Roberto Luongo's team, like, for the entire time that he was there. Like, even, like, to the point where I, like, look back, I'm like, God, I always knew the Sedins were amazing and incredible, but even then I feel like I never appreciated them enough for how good they were, because they were so incredible. What did the Sedins mean to you as a player, as a Canucks fan?
Yeah, they were all right.
They were okay. Like, God,
whatever. A bit overrated.
Good luck. Yeah, like, because you didn't necessarily see them through as rookies. Like, you came in, like, a little bit later.
I came way later, right? So, I basically started watching them, like, when they were kind of falling out of their prime, you know?
Like, they were in the 2010, 2011 era. Like, that was... peak years.
Yeah, like, so I wasn't, like, really into hockey in, like, the late 2000s or whatever. So, like, I kind of missed their cup era, so to speak. So
a little bit.
I mean, I was there for their final game, and let me tell you, the amount of drinks I had for that that send-off game, and the amount of times some weirdo called security on me for being too loud will stay with me forever. And because they brought that moment to me on a very cheap ticket, I think I've told this story on here. I bought 15 tickets for $40 or whatever. Ended up being like the biggest value deal, like, of all time, possibly. And so I cherish the memory they have left me.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Darcy Kemper in net for that game as a member of the Coyotes?
Ekman Larson and Brad Richardson were on the ice for that.
That's right. They were also there. Yeah. Like, God, that was a moment. Like, even, like, I watched that game from California, but I just remember, like, thinking, like, not only was it just like that final goal was so perfect in so many ways. And it wasn't just the fact that it was Henrik to Daniel into the back of the net from Edler. It was also the fact that literally the only other Canuck out there with them was Bo Horvat, who was going to end up becoming the next captain. Mm-hmm. Like, talk about literally just the perfect storybook ending for them.
Like, genuinely, like, kind of seemed like it was fake at that point. Like, especially when they get into the they scored with 2:33 remaining or whatever, 22:33 of overtime. And you're like, okay, who's making this shit up? Like, fuck off.
Like, it's fake. It's a game 82 of a season that means absolutely that.
Yeah, didn't matter at all.
Or sorry, game 81, because they did play the Edmonton game after that. But yeah. Literally, how many people have said before that, like, it was louder in there than any playoff game, than any Olympics gold medal game? Like, it was pretty much
that's when, like, Canuck fandom died and they had no reason to cheer again. Because they'd peak.
It's one of those just like it really did have such a Disney movie element to it, where it's like, oh, the heroes win it for the team, right thing.
Yeah, a little bit.
And it's so good. And like, I know this will be a hot take to, I think, a lot of people, like, if we have listeners that aren't Canucks fans that are cheering for other teams, I think that this is the TSN broadcast for the Hall of Fame announcing the inductions today kind of touched on it a little bit, but I'm going to go to a different, to even even higher echelon here with the Sedins, where like the Sedins as a, like as the athletes that they were and the generational athletes that they were deserve to be talked about in the same way, I think, that we talk about in terms of like oddity and like a rarity in once in a lifetime that we talk about like Bo Jackson, where it's like,
that is a hot take.
Because like, think about it. How has there ever been a scenario in any professional sport, like major professional sport, where a pair of twins have been both equally as dominant at a sport to on the same team at the same time for in any other sport? Like, has that, will that ever happen again? I don't think it will, because it, no. Like, because of how much has to go right for that to happen, right? They both have to be already, they both have to be transcendently good talents at the sport that of which they play. Then someone has to pull off a ridiculous amount of insanity transactions to draft them both for the same team. Like, like that in it, that alone makes it nearly impossible in today's like professional sports landscape. Like, it's not gonna, it might, like, it can't happen in basketball. It's not gonna happen in football. It's not gonna happen in hockey again. Like,
yeah,
it is something that, in a way, like, again, like, I made, like, in a way, we almost undervalued them for what they were, where it's like, we always valued them as hockey players for how incredible they were at the sport. But in so many ways, I don't think we value them for the absolute insanity of seeing a pair of identical twins play a sport as equally fantastically on the same team as they did. We will never see athletes like them again in any capacity. Like, it will never happen again. They were that good, and they deserve to be talked about in the same like reverence with as guys like Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders and Michael Jordan. Like, they deserve, for different reasons, but like, they deserve to be in that transcendent generational sports talent that broke a sport in their own way kind of thing, like Ricky Henderson, like those guys.
I'll let you handle the fan replies to this take.
Oh, I'm sure people, like, I'm sure people call me crazy, but yeah, like, I do, I think they deserve that. And I'm saying that as somebody, again, who, you know, I like, and you know, like, for me today when they were announcing the Hall of Fame, like, again, we knew the Sedins were gonna get in, right? Like, we talked about this before the show. Like, there was no doubt in, I think, either of our minds that the Sedins were going to get in on the first try. So for me today, when they announced Luongo, oh my God, I teared up. Like, I admittedly teared up. I was so happy that he got in, because again, like,
because it's nice to see like a below average goalie finally get his due.
Shut the fuck up. Like, like, okay. Like, this
a guy who was okay for like 4 years. And then
I famously, this is when the swearing comes in for me, right?
He had one good year and he didn't even get an award for it because he's just not that good.
God, horse that shit politics. Roberto Luongo is like, again, like, you know, what was really interesting to see about this particular draft class was how few Stanley Cups there were between them. Like, Henrik Zetterberg was the only one with any, or sorry, not, no, sorry, I'm not, not Zetterberg. Who am I thinking of that had
Daniel Alfredson?
There was, or no one had a cup, actually.
I don't think anyone did, yeah.
You're right. There were the candidates. Zetterberg was one of the candidates that was up,
yeah,
like one of the first year candidates. And he was the only one.
He was probably the only one that actually deserved to be in there based on like trophy and hardware.
And like, he only had one. And that's the thing that I think is really important, especially in like today's NHL. And today, and like how the Hockey Hall of Fame should like operates going forward, is like, there are going to be so many great players that never win a championship, like, just because of the how the league operates and how hard it is to win, especially if they can't build around you in the salary cap era. Like look at Connor McDavid. Like, Connor McDavid's halfway to that already. Like, in Draisaitl, same thing. Like, so for Luongo, a guy who has often been thrown under the bus as like not good enough simply because he didn't win any hardware, for me was always a massive, like, I always had such a, like, I always fought so hard for that guy on like the year that he didn't win the, that he finished second in both the Hart Trophy voting and the Vezina Trophy voting to two different players, not even just to one guy. He lost to Martin Brodeur in the Vezina because Brodeur played on a better defensive team and got helped that way. And then he lost to Sidney Crosby in the Hart Trophy voting. And it was just like the way Roman Yossi had that happen to him this year with like the Norris and the Hart as well, where he was second in both. It was such crap that he didn't, because he was so clearly the MVP of that team. And God, like, he is one of the greatest goalies in NHL history, but who will never get his due simply because he never won the final game. But even then, he won an Olympic gold medal. He won a World Cup of hockey. He won two gold medals, actually. He went to the finals. He literally changed the Canucks forever as like a team that had never had like an incredible goaltender, like a true elite goaltender in their midst. They finally got him, and he completely changed that franchise and made the 2011 team possible. Without him, they never come close. Like, God, it was incredible to see him get his due today. And now it's literally like you're seeing every like Canucks fans like talking about him, like all the, like literally the Sedins and Luongo like talking about how they feel like they're a unit as a unit, which mm-hmm. was really sweet.
Yeah,
and
then like pretty great, right? The best line in hockey, Sedin Luongo. That's pretty cute.
He's right. It was fantastic. And like, yeah, and then like even like Francesco Aquilini like tweeting about how he congratulating all three of them for making it in, and it just like, it's just it now it's literally okay, he's getting into the Hall of Fame. There's literally only one thing left now, and it's time. It's the money's coming up, the cap recapture's coming off the books. It's time to retire his jersey. They got to do it this year. Like, this is, they absolutely 100% have to retire Roberto Luongo's jersey this year. He's I could very easily pencil him in as the third best player in franchise history. Like, it's right behind the Sedins. Like, he belongs there.
Well, the problem is Frankie doesn't forget that he let him down in game 7. And Frankie is all about, what have you done for me lately? And do I remember you? So I could very well see him being like, he's good. He's in the Hall of Fame. That's all he should get. He went to Florida and he retired there and cost me money. Like, I could very well see him just like doing it that way.
I know we've definitely talked a lot about, you know, we have our opinions on Frankie as an owner. but I really would like to believe on this particular point that he understands the gravity of Luongo's, like how much Luongo matters to this team and like to this team's history, right? Where
he's, and there was out of touch with reality.
I mean, there was already talk that like things were being patched up when he was invited to be part of the Sedin's retirement, like jersey retirement night, like back in 2020, like, because he was there. He even got, like, literally we got the rarity of getting to see him with his captain seat, with his captain's jersey on, because he never got to wear it as a goalie in real games, which was really cool. Like, and, like, just having him there was fantastic. It's so about time that they finally patch that up, because it's the last thing left. It's so fully the last thing left. And look, I would say that the larger reason Luongo is in the Hall of Fame, going to the Hall of Fame at all, is entirely because of his time with the Canucks. So it's got to be done now. Like, the best time to do it is tomorrow. Like, if you know what I'm saying, right? The best day to do it is the very next day you can. And man, like, that's all I can put in there. Yeah. And I know I've spent too much time on it. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, just
I'm very passionate about Luongo. Like, he's my hockey hero, man. Like, ah, God, I'm so happy for him that he's going to the Hall of Fame. Herb Carnegie also, like, just like, I don't have as much to talk about with Herbie Carnegie. I don't know how much you know about. Do you know much about Herb Carnegie as a player, Cody?
I don't read it. I don't read history on hockey, dude. I ain't got time for that.
So I will just, like, I won't talk as long on this one. This is a really good builder's pick. The only thing being, of course, that this is, like, it's a posthumous induction for Herb Carnegie. He is, like, considered one of the like pioneers of hockey as a black hockey player in the 40s. Like, he was the superstar of the Quebec Aces, and literally, like, Jean Béliveau has before Jean Béliveau passed away, routinely talked about how much Herbie Carnegie meant to his career as a mentor and as a person. And like how important to him he was. And like, if Jean Béliveau is talking about a guy in that fashion, like, how is he not in the Hall of Fame? And it was like, it was one of those cases where it was like he never played in an NHL game, and right. because of the color of his skin, and it was awful that he hadn't. And I'm really thrilled that the Hockey Hall of Fame took this year to induct him, because like, and like, so often guys get pushed aside because of their lack of NHL experience, which is why he's going in as a builder rather than as a player. But like, that's great. Like, that's a fantastic pick for him to go in. Like, he is another guy, like, who deserves to be talked about in the same breath as a guy like Willie O'Ree or Larry Kwong or Fred Sisakamoose. Like, those guys who really paved the way for minorities in the sport. And God, like, yeah, like, that's a guy who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame for that alone. And it's good that they're making this happen now. Like, they're finally making it happen. Daniel Alfredsson getting in is a big deal. Like, is good for Ottawa. Like, that's a good one. I will say, like, okay, I don't want to take away from Daniel Alfredsson, but you and I were both very much on the Alexander McGillney train here.
Yeah, that's my only gripe with this thing. Is I don't know if I could justify Alfredsson in over McGillney, just given like what McGillney did to enter the league, like being like literally the first guy to hop over, and then in his debut, like, puts up like nearly 80 goals. Like, I don't know how you can. I know a lot of this is like you basically advertise yourself, like it's like the Academy Awards, like you pitch yourself for why you should be picked, but. The fact that he had, like, no one in the league has been like, hey, this guy needs to be in. And no one's been like, oh, yeah, this is long overdue. Like, that's like, shocking to me.
Thankfully, there's no, like, limit, like, term limit on, like, oh, once you've passed a certain amount of years of eligibility, you're no longer, like, eligible to win. Yeah. Which, baseball has that, and it's very stupid. Because, like, it's like one of those things where, like, apparently in baseball, there will be years where they'll only induct, like, two people just because they're like, oh, we felt no one else was deserving. It's like, shut up. There's, like, shut the hell up. Like, in hockey, at very least, they're like, well, we always will guarantee there will be at least this many people getting in. So there's no
he'll eventually come up, I'm assuming, when it's, like, when the choices are, you know, Zetterberg, Rod Brind'Amour, and McGillney. Like, I would be shocked if he didn't get picked at that point.
Yeah, like, it's a McGillney, like, again, McGillney should have been in a long time. He should have been in the first year he was eligible. Yeah. Like, that, like, and, like, and maybe that's, and, like, part of that might even be due to things like, even here in Vancouver, like, we don't talk enough, like, much about McGillney simply be in his time in Vancouver, simply because the team happened to be very bad. Like, at the time that he was here, but that was through no fault of his own for how, like, he was really, really good as a Canuck. He and Pavel Bure are the only two Canucks who have ever scored more than 50 goals in a season. Like, how is that not talked about more, that he was that good as a Canuck here?
I wonder if it's because people just think of his time in Buffalo more. Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. The Buffalo, like, throws a thing in and, like, but, like, yeah, like, there was things, like, I think there was a documentary that came out a few years ago specifically talking where the, like, all the voices of the Canucks, like, all the play-by-play guys, like Jim Robson, Jim Houston, and John Shorthouse were like talking with Brendan Batchelor, I think, about like their time covering the sport. And Jim Houston literally went on like a whole thing about how Alexander McGillney was like one of the best teammates that and one of the best guys in the locker room for like mentoring the young guys they had, like Marcus Naslund mm-hmm. and Todd Bertuzzi. Like he was so instrumental in helping those guys develop. But yeah, like that, like, yeah, hopefully we can get to, hopefully McGillney's got to get in there at some point.
I just don't, yeah, like the dude scored 76 goals in a season once. Like,
just ridiculous. Like, just insanity.
On. That like, alone should, like we're talking like, you know, Luongo getting in off of like, not one season, but like there was like a good 3-year run where like he was literally like the best. And for whatever fucking dumbass reason, he just didn't get the hardware to back yeah. how good he was. Like literally the top goaltender at the time.
Yep.
McGillney was like, when he was closing his time in Buffalo and then moved over to Vancouver, it was like, this guy is like one of the greatest like goal scorers in the league.
Yep. And he literally, like, and literally half the reason he just didn't end up on like, I think half the reason is like in for a lot of the same reasons as Luongo is just that he just happened to be on teams that didn't make deep playoff runs around him.
But he won a cup with New Jersey.
He won a cup like, with New Jersey. And you're right. He won a cup with New Jersey in 2000. But like people like, but by that point, the problem was like, people are like, well, you know, he was just kind of a supporting cast. It's like, well, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? Yeah. Look at all the goals he scored before that. Like, come on.
Well, that's the problem with like having Hall of Fame in general, right? Because you have like Dave Andrechuk or whoever the fuck it was, like guys
Did
that
Dave
were
Andrechuk
like,
in? Did he get in?
I can't remember. It's a guy's name that gets brought up all the time. I thought it was Dave Andrechuk.
It might be. I like
I just know someone got. I know there's one guy. Not last
Zuboff
year.
Is a guy who took forever to get in as well.
Yeah, I just know some guy like got brought in like a couple of years ago.
Kevin
but, yeah.
Lowe. Kevin yeah, Lowe.
Dave. Oh God. Yeah. Dave Andrechuk got put in 2017, 2018 as part of the Hockey Hall of Fame cast. And it's like, yeah, he's good. But like the hall is about like, I mean, to me, the Hall of Fame is supposed to be like, these were guys who were at their peak, the best in hockey.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little early to say, but Cale Makar probably going to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame for what he's accomplished before hitting 25.
Oh God, like, he could retire tomorrow and he'd be in the Hall of Fame. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like it's just like that, like that's kind of like stuff you reward. You don't reward guys who like just played the game a long time. Like Patrick Marleau, for example, like people are talking about like putting him in because he played over 1,000 games, even though he has no hardware. It's like
Well, Patrick Marleau, I think definitely. Well, Patrick Marleau, I think, is a guy like, so I do think that there is, I think that like there is also room for players going in for an induction if they mean something specific to a point in time in the game, if you know what I'm saying. Like they're an important, like a crossroad for a, usually like in particular for a team or something. Like Patrick Marleau is like, you can't tell the San Jose Sharks franchise story without Patrick Marleau, right? Like in the same way, like
I suppose, but in the grand scheme of the league, Patrick Marleau, you were never like he's the like a top five forward in the league. He's just,
right, like
he's just good.
He was just really good. He was never like the superstar. Like he was always like, even on his own team, like Joe Thornton was always the better player, like for a long time, right? But it's like one of those, like it's like I do have time for like, okay, if a guy gets in, but like Andrechuk is a weird one because it's like I don't remember him being like the guy for any team that he was on. He was just always one of the players. Like
he was just a guy who happened to play for a really long time and put up at least 50 points for quite a long time, which is good. It's just like,
yeah,
I don't know, the Hall of Fame for me should be like for the McGillneys, the Sedins,
yeah,
like the Ovechkins eventually, like, you know, those types, like generational talents or guys who transcend the game or transform the game in such a way that it is different with them having played it.
Yeah. And like one of the guys that you, like we were talking about yesterday, I think when we were talking about like the candidates there, like you, I think weren't as high on Rick Nash as one of those guys, particularly because he didn't score as many, like, you know, I think it was like, you know, for many points, this sort of thing, right? Like, you know, he never ended up being particularly at the first, the number one overall pick that he was supposed to be. But also like in his case, right? If he wasn't as good for the Columbus Blue Jackets in all the years that he was there, that team probably would have relocated by now, right? Like he, like that team maybe might not be here today if Rick Nash doesn't wasn't as big for them as he was, right? Like that's
why. So it's just I don't know if I'd put him in just because I don't know. Rick Nash to me was never like the greatest player in the league at any point. I just thought he carried a shit franchise, you know.
He carried a shit franchise, and that's why. And that, like, and you're right, like that. In a way, there almost needs to be another category for like players where it's like maybe they weren't necessarily the highest scoring guys, but they're getting in because they meant something to a crucial point in a team or like a or in the sport's history for some reason, right? Like they have an ulterior reason for being there. In the same way that like McGillney deserves to be there at the very least for being the first player to defect from the USSR,
like
just to play games in North America, like that alone.
You could legitimately make an argument that McGillney should be in there first as a builder than before like a player. Like that's just like his importance.
Like if he had just done that, played one season and scored like 5 points, he still probably would deserve to be in there just for that. Like that's because that's such a crucial moment in like world and hockey history for him to do that. Like that matters because that opened the door for other Russian players to come in and play. Mm-hmm. We spent way longer on Hall of Fame stuff than we meant to. Maybe we just need to make a crease cast Hall of Fame for players.
Yeah. Apparently we have some thoughts on this whole Hall of Fame business, which is true. Like, I mean, that happens with anyone. Like as soon as you bring up like any player, like I'm sure my dad would have a different opinion on McGillney or Luongo, right? Like, it's just like, it's a generational thing. Like some guy might look at Luongo and be like, oh, he played weird. He didn't play like the goalies that used to play when I was a kid. It's like, oh, well that doesn't count, but okay. But that's like the way it goes.
Yeah, he was no Bob Essenza.
Have I told you about Ken Dryden? Have you heard of him?
Oh, Ken Dryden is God. Ken Dryden. I'm trying to think who's the most like the most random goaltender I can think of from that time is like God. It's like Rick Tabarachi. Like there you go. Yeah, there you go. Like any goalie who played for the Winnipeg Jets in like the mid to late '80s, early '90s, like that's a goalie.
Even those goalies don't even remember that they played goalie for the Winnipeg Jets in the '80s.
God, do you remember who? To bring it full circle. Do you remember who the two goalies were for the Avalanche when they relocated from Quebec before Patrick Waugh showed up?
I feel like we were talking about this the other day.
Yeah. Shit. There,
I cannot remember.
It was a tandem of Jocelyn Thibault and Stéphane Fassette. Like that was their run. That was their tandem.
A tandem.
That is a 90s ass tandem. Like that actually got them first place in the East in that 95 shortened season. And then they got Juan, got even better.
Good for them.
Good for them, not so good for Quebec. Whoops.
Not so good for them, but hey, you can't win them all.
Yeah, you can't win. You can't win any of them, apparently.
Well, good.
Good. What a bummer to end on. Oh God, quick
for
quick,
them.
Quick, less bummer to end on. The Canucks talk. The Canucks were.
Oh yeah, the Canucks did a bunch of stuff. Most
Ethan
of the time,
Bear's agent
matter.
Reached out to the Canucks. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's good. Not good. They hired Dale Talon.
Well, thank God he's just based out of Florida, and he won't.
We'll probably have more to talk about everything they did on Monday, but obviously Hall of Fame talk and Cup final took precedence. Nobody really wants to hear about Sheldon Dries' 2-year extension. Like, who gives a shit? Breezeball's back, baby. Everybody's favorite prospect.
Breezeball season.
Yeah,
let's
I have
go.
A feeling. Draft is coming up in 9 days. The deadline to file for arbitration is on July 2nd. So Canucks are probably going to have like a fuckload of news in this next week alone.
It's going to be a massive couple weeks for the Vancouver Canucks. Like, and I say that as someone who has no intel on that. you can just tell it's coming. There's going to be so much there's going to be a crucial changes coming to that team, to the team. Over the next couple weeks, I think.
Yeah, and the fact that they've kind of slow rolled their news, like they announced a bunch of head office changes one day, and then literally the following Monday, they announced three different signings, plus news comes out that a bunch of people aren't getting re-signed for next year. So they're like, the wheels are turning on them getting set for next year. And so I'm sure as we approach the draft, shit is going to hit the fan quite considerably. But otherwise, folks, until that shit hits the proverbial fan, I have been Cody Sievertson, and you can follow my work at Cody Sievertson on Twitter, and you'll find my work at CanucksArmy.com. I spent most of today writing up the defenseman and goalie report cards. I hope my employer doesn't listen to this, but yeah, it's amazing what you can do with text-to-speech these days. Lachlan, where can they find your work?
You can find my work also at Canucks Army. I wrote an article today talking about how the how Ethan Bear's agent engaged with the Canucks for a little bit in some initial talks with since the Carolina Hurricanes are giving him a chance to talk to some new teams about a potential trade partner for him or as well. And I'm also going to be working on an article that you already basically got a bit of the gist of today, where talking about how Roberto Luongo is going to the Hall of Fame, and it's time to get him to the it's time for the jersey retirement to follow in Vancouver. And you can follow me on Twitter at Lock in the Crease. I think I'm at 950 followers. Let's see if we can get to 1,000 before
those are rookie numbers.
Before we end season three. Yeah, not all of us are as popular as you, Cody. We're not all A-listers like you. Jamie's not here. I don't remember her.
I think it's
her
Jamie Kalo underscore.
Yeah, and then Jamie Kalo Eats,
I believe.
Jamie Kalo Eats as well. And we may or may not have on the next show. By the time we do the next show, when Jamie is here, we may or may not have some. She may or may not have some interesting stories to tell us about. In relation to some of the stuff, one of the topics we talked about today. So we'll see about that. We'll see what happens when we come back next Monday.
Yeah, until then, folks, we'll catch you on the next episode. Bye, everybody.
Bye.